My daughter came home from school a couple of weeks after my case had been settled. And she said, Mommy, she said, you know, a lot of kids at school were asking me about you and what happened over the summer. And a lot of teachers, I said, I'm sure they did. She said, and Mommy, I finally found the courage to stand up to some kids who have been really bothering me for a long time. And she said, Mommy, I did it because I saw you do it.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I'm Tina Brown, and you're listening to TBD. Like Oscar winner or heavyweight champion, Miss America is a title that follows you for the rest of your life. 30 years ago, Gretchen Carlson, a Stanford and Oxford alum from Minnesota, won the crown at the iconic Atlantic City pageant. She parlayed that fame into a successful TV career, eventually becoming a co-anchor of Fox and Friends, and then the host of her own daytime program at the network. But in July 2016, after 11 years at Fox, Carlson went from reporting the news to being the news when Fox News fired her. She slammed back with a lawsuit, claiming it was in retaliation for refusing to have sex with her boss, the powerful pachyderm Roger Ailes. 2 weeks later, he was out. It was the opening shot in the Me Too movement, which burst forth more than a year later with the allegations against Harvey Weinstein. Fox soon settled with Carlson for a staggering $20 million. But more important, her lawsuit opened the door for a wave of other women to share their own stories about the culture of sexism and harassment at the network. It ultimately led to the oust of other powerful men at Fox, including News co-president Bill Shine and the network's biggest star, Bill O'Reilly. Last year, Carlson's career seemed to have come full circle when she was named chairwoman of the board of the Miss America organization. And this week, she's returning to TV with a powerful new documentary series on Lifetime that continues to shine a light on the Me Too movement. In Gretchen Carlson, Breaking the Silence, she shares Me Too stories that do not make news, such as rampant harassment at McDonald's. And in a painful parallel to her own saga, a young TV news anchor who was fired from her job after complaining of harassment. Gretchen Carlson, welcome to TBD.
Thanks for having me.
Let's go back to July 2016, when Me Too and Time's Up didn't exist and Harvey Weinstein still ruled by fear in Hollywood. Just how hard was it to take the first incredibly brave step that started all this, filing the suit against your boss, Fox chairman and CEO Roger Ailes, which in TV terms was like going up against Goliath? Was there any doubt in your mind about doing this? Were you afraid?
Scared would be the understatement of the century. Arguably it was the most difficult decision of my life. And it's not something, Tina, that you just decide to do like the night before. I mean, this is something that took me years to build up the courage. And I guess that I finally decided to do it when I realized that the career I had worked so hard for in television news for 27 years was going to be taken away from me, and it wasn't my choice. And I decided, okay, if I don't jump off the cliff now, who will? Who will ever tell this massive story?
And what did your husband say when you said that? Because this is to be really a shared decision in a sense. I mean, because you were going to put yourself and the whole family in a way through a very traumatic period.
Exactly. And my parents, who I'm still blessed to have in my life. So a couple of months before I made the decision, they actually both called me and we had a very emotional conversation. And they said, you know, we support you. That was a big part of me making the final decision. And then, you know, with regard to my husband, he knew what had been going on for quite some time, but not all the details. I mean, that's not something that you just come home every day and say, hey, guess what happened today? And I just remember the night before we didn't sleep and he looked at me and said, well, I really think they underestimated you.
Well, they did. I mean, obviously, you know, you were in much demand. You were rich, famous when you filed your suit. You had opportunities to work elsewhere. I mean, did you ever think, look, I'm just going to move on and work somewhere else?
Well, that would have been nice. Part of what happens to you when you work at Fox is that you can get marked for working there. And so trying to, you know, recreate your identity and go somewhere else could sometimes be difficult. And, you know, I think some people there knew that. So that was one thing that was working against me. But it really was more about that I knew what the culture was, and this was going to be the opportunity for me to do something about it.
It's always very difficult, of course, when women who've been harassed bring these suits, to be able to sort of prove unequivocally that this retaliation took place because I didn't do something. You know, how do you make that case? How do you actually, how were you able as well to say, look, I can say this has happened to me because I didn't come across to Roger Ailes?
Mm-hmm. Well, without getting into the details of my case, which I can't because that's what settlements do to women, unfortunately. You know, the only reason that my case is public is because my lawyers figured out a way to make it public. So hats off to them for that. But, you know, I think that what I can say hypothetically is that it's so important to document. And, you know, in my book, the whole fourth chapter is my playbook about what women should do, because it really nobody had really ever done that before, laying out a 12-point plan for how women should handle this type of thing. And the very first thing is document, document, document.
Take notes each time it happens.
Take notes, because you have to have evidence. And, of course, there's other ways of gathering evidence. And so it's very, very important to have that, because we still live in a he said, she said culture. Because here's what happens to women in the workplace if they're going through this, and thousands of women are going through it right now, listening to this podcast probably, is that they figure that if they just work harder, they can overcome it. And not only can they get past it, but that the man who's harassing them will suddenly appreciate them for their smarts, right? Problem is, that's never going to happen. But that's how we're trained as women, especially if we're go-getters. You know, it's like, and we never give up. Then we just keep working harder, 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 bang our head against that brick wall even more, and hope for change. And then one day, we finally can't take it anymore. And so we go to complain, and we don't have a plan. That's the problem.
You've got to have that plan.
Yes.
One of the things that's really struck me is that women who do report abuse, and may even win their case, nothing better ever happens to them afterwards. I mean, people don't say, I'm going to hire X. She won that harassment case. She's full of, you know, spirit, and she's a woman who stands up for herself. That makes me want to hire her. Do you agree that actually that is one of the harshest things about all this, that even if you win your case, you'll become a kind of a toxic entity in the corporate workplace?
Yes. Well, totally, because we don't see a lot of those women ever hired. And more so, even people who haven't won their cases, women we've never heard about who have the courage to come forward, all these silenced victims, they never work again either. I mean, that's been the greatest tragedy of what I've figured out over the last 2.5 years since my case broke, was when these thousands of women reached out to me, their stories were eerily similar in the sense that here's what happened to me. I was quickly demoted, blacklisted, and fired. And guess what? I have a PhD in such and such, and I've never worked in my chosen profession ever again.
Yeah, well, that is a stunning thing. Mm-hmm. And it's doubly unfair.
It's doubly unfair. And I think that while we're in this cultural revolution right now that we're experiencing, one of the things I've been talking about is, and one of the reasons I did this documentary, is we need to reawaken corporations and companies to take a closer look at exactly what you're talking about. If they really want to be honest and true to themselves and fair to women, they should be going out and looking for those women who were wronged, because there's thousands of them out there, trust me. And it's not that they're not educated and smart and capable.
But they're branded as troublemakers.
They're branded as troublemakers. And these are the myths that we need to try to move past.
Well, this society we're in is very good at that, right? It's like the rape victims who come forward and all of a sudden they're trashed again for who they're supposed to be. And rather than having, you know, the assailant be the one who comes out trashed at the end of it. It's really...
It's a cultural issue.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I haven't been able to put my finger on in all the work that I've been doing is why? Why do we as an American culture protect the perpetrator?
Yeah.
Why?
No, it's a massive question. And I think that part of the interesting work you're doing is to make companies as well ask themselves that. Stop saying that this is a person we have to shut down instead of saying, what are we doing wrong?
Or that we have policies on the books, so we're doing everything, and we have zero tolerance. If I hear that one more time.
I know. Well, no, it's a complete cover-your-ass phrase,
it
right?
It is a total cover-your-ass phrase. And so, really, if you look back on history, what I think happened since the Anita Hill hearings, and ironically, that was one of the first news stories I covered when I got into the business, and then I was promptly harassed on the job where I was working in Virginia. But I think what happened after that in the last 20-plus years is that companies realized, well, my goodness, we have to incorporate training for our employees, right? And we have to incorporate sexual harassment policies. So they were very good at doing that. But did they actually take the time to figure out whether or not those policies and that training was actually making a difference? And they don't feel the need to do that, maybe until now. You know, the power of the individual worker, we need to acknowledge that. Because look at what happened when there was the Google walkout. There was change. Right after that, Google took forced arbitration clauses out of their employment contracts, which is what I've been lobbying on Capitol Hill for the last 2 years.
Right. And Uber, too.
Uber. Absolutely. Well, actually, the first company was Microsoft.
Yeah.
So then you had this, you know, sort of tidal wave, and then Facebook got on board, and Airbnb, and eBay. But it was really the Google walkout that finally was the tipping point for that. So I think that example is really important because it shows what happens when voices of employees decide to come together and make a difference.
Well, there's a fear now, as you say. I mean, the power of that is scary to corporations. And perhaps until you came out and the Me Too movement got going, there's been a kind of con job, really, on employees that they sort of are powerless, whereas actually they're very powerful when they amass and do things in that kind of way. Well, the documentary is very, very interesting indeed, mostly because you really hear the voices of women that you just don't normally hear, the kinds of women you're talking about. And you hone in on the stories of two McDonald's employees, Tanya Harrell and Kim Lawson, who both went through horrible experiences, and they were tremendously moving stories, I thought. Tell me about Tanya and Kim.
Yes, so I went to visit Tanya in New Orleans. She had worked at several different McDonald's stores, and she alleges that not only was she harassed on the job, but that she was also allegedly assaulted in one of the bathrooms at work by a fellow colleague employee. And you know, I think that the biggest takeaway in this story and the others is that it's so typical from the thousands of other stories I've heard where she alleges she went to complain to the right person, a supervisor, and nothing was done.
You know, what really disappointed me as well, though, is that usually the second person they complained to was a woman,
right?
A female supervisor. Mm-hmm. Is that very disappointing to you that women are unsupportive of other women? That you're a woman manager and another woman comes to you and says, I'm experiencing this, and you go like, well, you know, we'll try and move you around or we'll just, and they blow it off.
Mm-hmm. I think it's two things. I think it's back to that cultural discussion we were having, which is even women are socialized into thinking it's not that big of a deal, right? And we should just get past it as other fellow women. And number two, these women want to save their jobs too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the way we fix this ultimately is we put more women in higher level positions. Because guess what doesn't happen when you have women in higher positions? Harassment.
Right.
And so that's why this is a multifaceted problem to fix. It's not just how do we get rid of harassment. It's how do we pay women fairly? How do we promote them? How do we put them in the boardroom? I mean, this is why we need men so much in the equation, you know, is because they're an instrumental part of putting women in more powerful positions so that they don't feel threatened by their jobs to turn against other women.
McDonald's is this mighty corporation.
I know.
It's a mighty corporation. They have thousands of women employees. Why would they not want to address this? I mean, they stonewall you in the movie when you try and raise it with the corporate higher-ups.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I've been saying, I jump out of a lot of cars in this documentary, demanding to get answers and accountability for these workers who have never had their voices heard. And we do get stonewalled. We do get a statement from McDonald's. But as one of the lawyers in the documentary showcases brilliantly, you know, McDonald's, when they have a lettuce outbreak of contamination, they require all their franchises to stop selling that lettuce and that salad, right? But their claim in this documentary is that they can't really tell their franchises what to do with regard to sexual harassment policies, that that's up to them individually, so that it's a franchise problem. But that's not the way that they would necessarily operate for something like a salad outbreak. So, you know, I think that once this documentary airs on Monday night on Lifetime, that there will be a lot of questions and possibly change, not only McDonald's, but in other companies who need to take a more introspective look at whether or not they really are doing all they can to make the workplace safer for women. And I'm here to tell you that the answer predominantly is no.
Right. Now, do you think that fast food workers are the most vulnerable?
I think they're one of the biggest groups, but, I mean, you could go down the line for a lot of different jobs. Look at, like, firefighters. I also feature a firefighter in the documentary. Police officers, female police officers, waitresses. I've heard from airline mechanics who are female. Oil rig operators, members of our military especially. I mean, this is such a pervasive epidemic, Tina, that it's from, you know, the lower wage earners all the way up to very high level executives. It's every profession and every socioeconomic level.
How are we going to really educate the men into treating women differently? Because in the end, nothing's going to happen unless they do. And as we've just agreed, these cover-your-ass sort of training schemes are just about people going, oh, God, I've got to do my 3 days orientation or whatever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't bite.
It doesn't bite at all. And now it's actually moved to the computer. You used to actually go to face-to-face kind of training. What I heard from so many executives is they just have their assistants fill it out. So what good is that doing? But I have been preaching for the last 2 years that men are the central part of this equation. If we don't get men on board, we won't win this battle. First of all, because men still predominantly run the Fortune 500 companies and small businesses and down the whole food chain, right? So we need them. We need them to hire us and pay us fairly. That's the first thing. But we also need them to make a pledge with us that they're going to come forward when they witness this kind of behavior and not enable it. That's predominantly what keeps sexual harassment alive within the confines of the workplace structure, is men see this happening, and they also don't speak up. So imagine if we could turn this completely on its head. Imagine if the president of the company gets everyone together and says, I will not tolerate this in my company, and the buck stops with me. And actually, if you come forward, I will honor you, I will listen to you, and I will celebrate you.
Daily-harvest.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, 15% off your first order with code WONDERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code WONDERY for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code WONDERY.
Gretchen, when you filed your lawsuit, there was no Me Too. It was just you. But a year later, the Weinstein horror show began. And do you remember what you thought when you first read those vile stories about Weinstein? And do you think he's going to go to prison?
I remember exactly where I was because I was on an airplane going to Dallas to give a speech. And I had heard that this story was in the works for quite some time, but I couldn't believe it when it was actually published. It was very emotional for me. Right. I didn't sleep at all that night because I kept thinking about all those women and what they had gone through, and in many cases, much worse situations than what I had endured. Whether or not he's going to go to prison, I will say that the day that I saw the images of him in handcuffs was another extremely emotional moment for me, and I'm sure for all of his victims, but all the other women across our country who've had a similar experience. Right. And there's too many of us. I think that the case, I hope, has enough evidence. But there can be some of the strongest parts of the case where the women have chosen not to come forward. And
making that case is hard.
And again, it all comes down to the evidence. And it also comes down to the jury of your peers, you know. What do they actually believe happened and didn't?
And yet we were shocked when Bill Cosby finally...
But Bill Cosby, I will tell you, another emotional day for me. I wholeheartedly believe that that conviction is a result of happening during the Me Too movement. Because it changed, I think, the perception of the American public enough for that jury pool to understand that this is pervasive.
Right. Because the first trial, it was hung.
Right.
Second trial, guilty.
Guilty. And the other difference was the same judge let in other testimony of other victims in the second trial, which was another huge reason why I believe he was convicted.
Where do you think we are currently on the curve of the Me Too movement now? I mean, we've seen it. It's been going really since you shot your opening salvo with Roger Ailes. And it continues. And a lot of big men have fallen, a lot. Where do you think it's going next? Is this something that is going to keep gathering steam and there will be genuine cultural change? Or will there be a kind of, okay, now it's time to move on?
Yeah. So two things. I often get the question, usually from men, haven't we had enough of Me Too?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
and I usually say, no, we're just kind of getting started, which is the reason for this documentary, because look at all these other women out here who nobody's ever heard of, but this same thing has happened to them. But I do think that there are three really important reasons why the Me Too movement is still alive and well. Number one, because of social media. As much as I don't like it for my children, I think that it has really made this movement come alive and stay alive. Because women and men were given the choice to be anonymous or put their name and face on their accusations over social media, and it spread like wildfire. Number two, women saw consequences in my case and others. In my case, they saw swift consequences of my alleged perpetrator, you know, being gone in 2 weeks. And I think they thought to themselves, and they've told me, wow, maybe if I come forward, I will have similar consequences.
But of course, okay? There's a huge difference, right? They don't have the money to get a top lawyer.
No, but actually to just be believed.
Right.
You know, to be believed. We've seen that massive culture shift already. Look at what happened with Matt Lauer. He apologized and he was gone. Even just that year's time since my story, it was drastic change. They didn't trash the women who came out against Matt Lauer like they did me at the beginning. So there's been sort of this major culture shift, at least on that front. The third big thing, I think, is that the American public was outraged at these stories because they thought, as so many others, that by 2019 we had solved this issue in our culture, right? And why did they think that? Because they weren't hearing about these stories. But the reason they weren't is because they were going to secret settlements and they were going to secret arbitration. And so nobody was hearing about these stories. Doesn't mean they weren't happening.
But if you are a maid, you know, or you are a waitress, mm-hmm. do we still think it is really any easier now for that woman to risk her very slender income and come forward? Because as we both agreed, you know, getting fired, if you do come forward, even if you win, it's very difficult to get another job. So are we asking too much of women to be able to come forward still, even though there is this great example that we've seen with yourself and a few other very, very brave, quite a few now brave women who've come out against these very powerful people?
And that was the one question that pained me every night when I tried to go to sleep, is how do we help those types of women?
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons I wanted to do this documentary, to raise awareness of those kinds of women, minimum wage workers, right? And number two, it's why I created the Gretchen Carlson Leadership Initiative, which is a 9-city tour every year where I provide free workshops in each of these locations for women just like that to come and get legal help, to get inspiration, to find their voice, and to know that they're not alone, right?
Now, those McDonald workers in your film, who are the heroes in my view, what's going to happen to them? I mean, McDonald's are going to see this movie. Have they seen the movie?
Not that I know of yet. I mean, they know about it because we tried to get them to comment for 9 months. What's going to be done? I think that that's going to be the most important outcome of this documentary airing, which is what will McDonald's do?
Absolutely. And what will they specifically also do with those women who can become really, they could turn them, if they're smart, they'll make those women absolutely part of their futures.
Well, one of them still works at McDonald's.
Right.
Yes. So she's at a different store than where she alleges these events happened, but she's still working at McDonald's.
Incredible. So let's talk about your post-Fox life, because you've done a lot since Fox. You're now chairwoman of the Miss America organization. And it's actually been very turbulent, hasn't it, your tenure? 46 state organizations would call on you to resign. What happened here? Why has it been such a kind of thorny gig, Gretchen?
Well, listen, change is difficult. We're going to celebrate 100 years next year. As you know, our board unanimously decided to stop judging on physical beauty, and that meant the elimination of the swimsuit competition. And, you know, that ruffled some feathers within the internal audience. I will tell you that the external audience has been highly supportive of that move, including companies who want to align themselves with us. And our decisions have to be based on the financial sustainability of the organization. We're a nonprofit, so right. We need sponsors.
Do you have the funding to move forward with the pageant, and will ABC continue to air it, do you think?
We are in negotiations with different networks right now. And as I just mentioned, after we made that groundbreaking decision, we actually have had Fortune 500 companies call us to say, we'd like to align with you now, right. You know, now that you're moving in the more broad direction of relevancy for more women.
I mean, I guess the question a bit is, you know, will Miss America continue to exist in the sense that is it still relevant? I mean, as women really, you know, continually move to be more empowered and more, you know, judged simply on their achievements and so on, is there something very anachronistic about Miss America?
No, not in the way that we were trying to move it forward and make it relevant. So here's what they're competing for: interview skills, talent, and scholarship money. I mean, what program would not be a good idea for a woman to enter to be able to know how to do an interview, exhibit their talent, get self-confidence, and at the end of the day, we hand you $10,000 to be able to go to school that year.
Well, how did Miss America change your own life? Because you were Miss America.
Mm-hmm. I was. And the predominant reason that I entered was because I was a very serious classical violinist as a child. And when I decided to give that up, my parents were incredibly upset. And my mom got a brochure in the mail on Miss America. I happened to be studying at Oxford at the time, and she called me up. She said, I found something for you to do. I said, what? She said, the Miss America competition, 50% of the points are based on talent. You should do this. And I said, are you nuts? I mean, I grew up a chubby kid. I was a tomboy. I was a musician. Like, I wasn't watching pageants. But my mom's a very convincing person, and so I set my mind to it. And talent was 50%. Interview was 30%.
And tell me what it was like competing in that. I mean, did you get really into it? But did it become a very nerve-wracking thing to do?
Yeah, no, you know, I really, so like anything else in my life, I put my heart and soul into it while I was competing. So I actually dropped out of Stanford when I decided to make a go of it, because I realized if I don't put 110% of myself into this, then I don't want to ever have to look back and say, well, I didn't work hard enough for it.
Well, because, I mean, that is a kind of amazing career trajectory right there, right? Mm-hmm. Stanford, Oxford, Miss America. Mm-hmm. I mean, explain it.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, my life has worked in mysterious ways. I never expected to do any of those things. I mean, I was going to be a musician. Then I was going to be a lawyer. And then this Miss America thing came about, which got me into television. So I will say that it gave me immense communication skills. I'll never forget one of the first weeks after being Miss America, I was at an event in Atlanta with like 2,000 people at a dinner, and I thought I was just attending. And the guy in charge came up to me after the main meal, and he said, oh, I just wanted to give you a 5-minute notice for your keynote. And I said, excuse me? And he said, yes, your keynote. I said, oh, fantastic. I said, well, how long would you like me to speak? And he said, oh, just an hour. So I went into the bathroom with a paper napkin and a pencil and jotted down some bullet points while I pretended to be going to the bathroom. And I went out and spoke for 60 minutes. So these are the types of skills that you learn. And also, I learned to always have 4 speeches in my back pocket. But these are the types of skills that you learn at a very young age. I was only 22. And so that experience really made me so equipped to be able to have a career in television.
But you see, if I think about being a Miss America, I would have thought that was 12 months of being sexually harassed. I mean, it's a fact that if that good looking, you're going to probably find yourself battling people who just simply want to have a date with Miss America.
Well, and I was actually sexually assaulted twice. At the end of my year as I was trying to break into the television business. And I never told anyone for 25 years.
Wow. What were the circumstances of that?
So I had met with a high-level television executive here in New York City for the entire day, and he was so helpful. He made all these calls for me, and we went to dinner, and you know, I thought, wow, this guy really thinks I'm smart. And then on the way back to my friend's apartment in the back seat of the car service, he was suddenly on top of me with his tongue down my throat. And so I managed to escape from the car and was a wreck, and only told my friend and never told anyone else. And then promptly 3 weeks later, a similar situation happened in L.A. when I was meeting with a top PR executive, again, just trying to break into the business. And we were in a car again, and he took my head in his hand and my neck and shoved my head into his crotch, and I couldn't breathe. I mean, it just came out of nowhere, and I managed to escape. Again, ironically, I saw that man 26 years later walking through the halls of Fox, and he walked past my office. And, you know, not many outside people got up onto the floors of our offices, and I went back into being that 22-year-old young woman. It's amazing the PTSD effects of being assaulted and being taken advantage of like that. And I ran up out from my desk. I slammed my door. I started sweating. And I thought, how am I going to be able to leave my office? I don't want to see this man. And so I was like a kid again, looking outside of my door, making sure the coast was clear so I could get to the elevator. It goes to show you that even when you have made something of your life and gotten to a high level in your career, that these events, they affect you for the rest of your life.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Gretchen, you know, you have two children. One of them is a 15-year-old mm-hmm. daughter, and of course your son also, who's, I think, what, 13?
13.
What kind of impact has this had on your kids? Because they've lived through this with you.
I know, and they were my paramount concern because they were obviously younger when I filed my case, and I only told them the night before. It was very emotional time, and actually my son, right after I told him mommy got fired and mommy's going to be doing this big thing tomorrow— And he looked at me and he said, Mommy, he said, what's going to happen to our babysitter? And I was like, I'm so glad he loves her so much. I'm worried about her, too. But what about Mommy? But anyway, they were troopers. And two quick stories about how the courage has transferred to them. My daughter came home from school a couple of weeks after my case had been settled. And she said, Mommy, she said, you know, a lot of kids at school were asking me about you and what happened over the summer, and a lot of teachers, I said, I'm sure they did. She said, and Mommy, I finally found the courage to stand up to some kids who have been really bothering me for a long time. And she said, Mommy, I did it because I saw you do it.
Oh, that's very, very moving.
Very
Gretchen.
Moving.
Yeah.
And my son watched me on a CNN town hall, and when I came home from out of town, he was very upset waiting for me in the kitchen. And he said, Mommy, is it true what that other woman said about statistics in our country, that once every 73 seconds a woman is assaulted or harassed? He said, Mommy, is that true? And I said, I'm so sorry to tell you that that is true. And he looked at me with tears in his eyes, and he said, Mommy, as a young man, I want to do my part to fix that.
Oh, wow. Well, this is where it really matters.
This is where it matters. And listen, I went into my husband's office, and I just burst into tears, and I said, if it's only that I've touched these two lives— then I've done my work.
There are not one, but actually two projects in the works now about you. Roger Ailes and your time at Fox. Nicole Kidman portrays you in a film that's shooting right now, and Naomi Watts is playing you in an upcoming Showtime series. You don't like the Nicole Kidman movie by the sound of it, although you haven't seen it, presumably, but you've read the script, right?
Yeah, you know, hopefully they're going to make some changes to it.
Sure.
Listen, I'm not going to say anything negative when you have Hollywood stars who are taking on your storyline.
Yeah, a lot of people fight to have Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think here's the frustration. I can't be a part of any of these projects.
Right.
And that's another problem with settlements. So, you know, when I sign a settlement, I sign away my ability to be able to tell my real life story.
That must be kind of agonizing.
It is.
I mean, you know, in the Harvey Weinstein case, of course, a lot of women were just sort of saying, I'm defying my settlement.
Mm-hmm.
Have you thought about doing that?
No.
Right. It was too much of a clampdown?
Well, I think that some of the women who have broken their settlements were from some time ago, and they were talking about a couple thousand dollars, you know. I don't think it's typically a good idea to go against that. But I think the frustrating part for me is just that if my life story is going to be told in these big venues, then I just hope that it's accurate.
Right. Is there going to be a moment, do you think? Is it forever? Or will it be like 15 years from now, you think, that you might be able to do that?
Who knows?
Who knows?
That's like asking me to look into a crystal ball,
yeah,
Tina.
Okay, okay. So do you miss hosting a news show? I mean, I know you're now a documentary maker, but,
yeah,
you know, you did, this all began with you very much not wanting you to leave your job, right?
Right, of course. I killed myself to get there.
Yeah, you killed yourself to get there. Would you like now to be the anchor of the 7 o'clock news?
I mean, maybe. But I have to be honest with you, I've actually enjoyed my time away watching. And especially during this political process where it's become even more divisive than when I left, I have actually felt relieved on some days that I'm not doing this on a daily basis. But, you know, listen, Lifetime gave me a huge opportunity to come back and gave me the opportunity to be a beacon of hope for all of these other women who've never been able to go back to their careers. And I think it's been fascinating for me to do something different. You know, like I said, my life has worked in such mysterious ways. Who knows what I'm going to be doing next year? But right now, this is really satisfying to me, and I'm already, you know, working on the next documentary and ideas.
How will you sort of stay involved with these women, or do you regard it as, I've done this now, onto my next project, or are you going to stay involved with this work?
You know, every single day I get approached to do something new with regard to this issue. So I think I could spend the rest of my life working on this if I so choose. For example, you know, I worked for a year and a half to get my legislation introduced. Now we have a new Congress, so I'm starting all over again.
So tell me the legislation. That's about...
That's ending sexual harassment ending Arbitration Act of sexual harassment. Very simple bill. It's only 2.5 pages, as opposed to like our healthcare bill. Very simple to understand. Simply give women a choice whether or not they want to go to the secret chamber of arbitration and have no one ever know whatever happened to them, or be able to go to the open court system. Some companies have already taken those clauses out of their contracts without federal legislation forcing them, like Microsoft, Uber, Google, Facebook, et cetera. So my hope is that more companies will do that, because the only way that we're really going to solve this issue is if we talk about it openly and if we don't continue to hide it in secret chambers like arbitration. So I could do work on this for the rest of my life. Whether or not I choose to do that, you know, I'm very involved in it now, but who knows?
All right. Thank you very much, Gretchen.
Thank you, Tina.
You've been listening to TBD with me, Tina Brown, brought to you by Wondery. You can subscribe to TBD on Apple Podcasts, follow us on Spotify, or keep up with us however you listen to podcasts. If you like what you heard, please spread the word. Tweet about it, Instagram it, or, you know, try having an actual conversation with a real person. We'd also like to learn more about you. Please complete a short survey at wondery.com/survey. That's wondery.com/survey. You'll have an opportunity to tell us what you like about the show and what you'd love to hear in future episodes. TBD is produced by Tina Brown, Kathleen Russo, Julie Subrin, Karen Compton, Justin Giannino, and Michael Solomon. Original theme music is composed by Forrest Gray. Come back next time for more smart people on TBD.